You talk about the Albanese government being basically reactive to the cost of living and their strategy being performative and ineffective. Do you want to tell my listeners what do you think's going on here?
It's clear that the government is not very happy with its poll numbers and isn't particularly concerned about the actual lives of ordinary people and particularly people in poverty. And to elaborate a bit on that, we've actually now just seen today the announcement about their planned changes to the tax cuts that were due to come in later this year. And what we see from that is the highest income earners will still receive a $4,500 a year tax cut. People below the poverty line will receive a few dollars a week if they're earning above the tax-free threshold, but anyone relying on the job seeker payment will not only not receive any help at all, but this change will actually see people on job seeker ending up with an income tax bill at the end of the year, and that's because of perverse outcomes from the way that job seeker interacts with our tax system. So I think it's really clear that if the Prime Minister wanted to solve these problems and actually help people survive, that they would have dealt with those issues. But they've ignored everything they've been told by welfare recipients, and I think they're just coming up with policy based on what they think the media will like.
Yeah, so trying to balance the rhetoric between the big end of town and the needs of the other people in the community.
Yes, it's all a game to them. They don't actually think about those of us who don't have it that easy, what it's like and what's necessary. And I don't just mean welfare recipients, of course. I'm sure many folks listening who don't rely on Centrelink payments but do real jobs, unlike political jobs, are also really struggling. And again, these changes are not even going to be particularly significant for people unless they are really high income earners.
Well, that figure of $4,000, over $4,000 as a tax cut, that's unthinkable for people who are gliding underneath the Henderson poverty line.
That's correct. I mean, it actually works out to about 3 months of job seeker payments. So we could think of it as people earning $200,000 a year, just getting a few months worth of job seeker on top of their fantastic salary for fun. It's certainly hard to swallow, and I know that I'm not the only welfare recipient feeling pretty sick today, having just seen these announcements.
The Henderson poverty line is something that some people might not even understand. Do you want to explain that to my listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Henderson poverty line is currently about $600 a week, and that puts it $225 above the job seeker payment every week. So people are currently trying to survive on a couple of hundred bucks a week below the poverty line, unless they're on youth allowance, in which case they're $275 a week below the poverty line. Because despite the fact that things aren't cheaper if you're 22, for some reason, you don't get as much money from Centrelink to try and live. So the Henderson poverty line is actually a very old poverty line, and it's not particularly sophisticated. But the reason that we and other advocates, other unemployed advocates, call for payments to be immediately and urgently lifted to the Henderson poverty line is as a triage measure. It's the least bad one we have. And we know this because of everything that people told us in 2020 when the Morrison government did actually lift payments to that level. So things that are need to change, for example, the Henderson poverty line was developed in the 60s, so they didn't have mobile phones and computers and things like this. Some things are cheaper, like televisions, but some things are more expensive, like houses. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done, but of the variety of poverty lines that people use, we use this one for now, and we have also called on the government many times to work with us to develop a much more sophisticated measure of poverty that will actually help us understand what it costs for low-income people to live.
You also have said that people, your the Anti-Poverty Network has also pointed out that people have been working very hard to get better outcomes for people in this regard, and we're hoping for much more from this government. That it's actually just people are just now worn out because the changes just haven't come.
Yes, and also I'll just the Anti-Poverty Network is wonderful and we do work with them, but we're the Anti-Poverty Centre and we apologise for making that quite confusing for folks. So I was actually incredibly cynical when this government came to power because of the things that they were saying ahead of the election, and they were extremely careful in their wording. They used a lot of weasel words that were designed to give the impression that they were benevolent and that they cared about people who are struggling. But the actual commitments they made, and what was particularly telling, was the commitments they refused to make when asked and when pressured by journalists, said an awful lot more about what we were to expect. But you're right, a lot of people did feel hope. Both people on welfare payments and people who have been really active in advocating for more. And people are demoralized. People are crushed. And despite my incredibly low expectations, I'm really struggling too. And we're not going to stop, but it is an extra burden that we're trying to deal with and to overcome on top of the daily just distress and despair of trying to manage impossible budgets on payments that are just unlivable.
It's not just the low payments, but it's also a whole range of other things. It's two things like the mutual obligations and people being suspended and that sort of stuff that's really causing trouble, isn't it?
Absolutely. So another particularly sickening figure that we got right at the end of last year was the number of payment suspensions. People might not be aware that the government conducted an inquiry into the system that is used to impose these penalties, these mutual obligations penalties. And that's if you don't jump through all the right hoops, your payment gets paused or cut completely. And so when that in the year that it took them to do this inquiry, despite many previous inquiries, despite the mountains of evidence that advocates like ourselves have provided about the harm the system caused, they took a year, and in that year, well over 2 million payment suspension notices were issued, which every single one of those payment suspension notices causes distress, throws people into a tailspin, requires enormous amounts of admin to resolve. An incredible number of them are reversed and often are due to error from the people who are tasked with policing welfare recipients and whose job is to impose these penalties. And so we had in that 1 year more than 25% of those suspensions were applied to First Nations people. Obviously, that's an incredibly disproportionate number. And that's reflective of all sorts of things that are making it harder for First Nations people to comply with these pointless and punitive activities, as well as racism from the people imposing the penalties. So it's egregious. It is continuing unabated. We have written to Minister, the Employment Minister Tony Burke, late in December, asking for an urgent pause on this payment suspension activity in the wake of the inquiry report into Workforce Australia. He doesn't show a lot of interest in doing things that will actually help people, but he does do a good job of feigning interest. So we'll wait to see what his response is on that. He hasn't given us a clear answer yet, but we do feel like we're being strung along. So, yes, there's not a lot of improvement coming out of the Labor government.
Well, it's kind of interesting, but this because the CPSU, the Union for Workers in the Public Service, have been running a campaign wanting those jobs services to go back to the government in a form of CES, which is kind of interesting, isn't
Yeah,
it?
absolutely. And we've been calling for a voluntary public sector employment service for a long time. It's really excellent to have the support of the CPSU now on that, but it's really important that everyone advocating for this, including the CPU, understands that it does not matter who cuts your payment if you cannot afford to eat, and that mutual obligations, like an unemployment cop having better wages and conditions than the one who used to, it doesn't do much for the person who's being made homeless because they couldn't do a CV in the way that the bully at the job agency dictated to them, or decided to stand up for their rights when they were being lied to. So having a public sector employment service, we think, is really important. We think that it can only work if there are no penalties being applied to welfare recipients. And another really important thing to make a high quality service is to make it available to everyone who wants help, so that you don't have to be a welfare recipient to use this service, that it can be like many other services, like the public health system, where anyone who needs it can access it and you have a choice to go to a private provider if you prefer. But it's not this thing that's concentrated and only for the worst off people, because that's how we get bad services, is when the only ones who access them are the people who no one else cares about.
This is about breaking people down into different unequal groups of people, I guess.
That's right. We already have a very high quality private sector employment service, and it's not the one the government forces us to engage with, but it's called, most people call them recruitment firms. You know?
Yeah, that's
so
right.
Recruitment firms. If you're just a person out there in the world who already has a job, you can go to a recruitment firm and say, hey, I would like help getting a job, and they'll do that for you. And it's a great experience. In my past experience, I've been able to do that. But you're not allowed to do that, or you're not going to be given a lot of support from those types of people if you're long-term unemployed. And instead of the government sort of realizing that there is this inherent problem, they've just created a monster that is mimicking that system, but in no way actually required to help people, and therefore all it does is punish.
There was a very interesting note about people who have been had their payments suspended, but have to still do mutual obligation. Is that something what's that about?
Because of how complex the online systems are that are used by Centrelink, by Services Australia, by Workforce Australia, by Disability Employment Services, by the job agencies themselves, and by the Department of Employment and the Department of Social Services, there are an awful lot of places where information needs to be entered to make sure that your information is correct. But having a payment suspended doesn't actually automatically mean you don't have to do activities, because your requirement is not based on whether you get money in your account. Your requirement is based on whether you are technically on the books for getting that payment, if that makes sense. So for a person who, for example, has been working for a certain period of time, so their payment might go down to zero, but they technically still are on the job seeker payment, even if they don't get any of it, then they still have activities, right? And if you don't want to do those activities, then you can stop doing them. You won't get a payment. You already weren't getting a payment. But what happens if you get kicked off the system? And then obviously a lot of people then fear that their casual work or their short-term work will actually dry up, and then they have to go through the process of applying again. And
That makes complete sense. The other thing that's really interesting and disturbing, I'll have to say, is that 45% of people on JobSeeker unemployment payments have a disability or chronic health condition. Now, that sort of gives you the impression that these people have been moved from a previous system, right?
Yeah, so the Gillard government, and in fact Jenny Macklin, who was the social services minister in the previous Labor government, presided over some catastrophic changes to the disability support pension and how you qualify to get on it and that application process. After those changes were implemented, there was a very sharp increase in the number of disabled people and people who are unwell ending up stuck on job seeker payments long term. So since that time, we've seen the average time on the unemployment payment shift from 2 years to now being up to around 5 years. that's not a reflection in the changing labour market or the unemployment rate, because obviously in that time, those things have fluctuated, but that number has not. That number has steadily increased and is now plateaued at the level where we basically have one in two people on unemployment payments, very long term, and with a condition that makes it much harder for them to get into the labour market, partly because of their own maybe capacity limitations, but also because employers discriminate against people. So it's not just a lack of suitable jobs for people that accommodate their health conditions, but also the fact that people don't want to hire you when they think you're going to be harder to work with or require support.
And so what we're saying is that they reduce their payments bill and they've put all these people into a sense of fear and agitation.
Yes, and I myself am on the disability support pension, and I have to say it is certainly not a payment that is livable either. But everyone who is that I speak to who's on it, we all feel an incredible amount of guilt for the fact that our payment is higher, even though it's not enough, because we know how many people. We don't want anyone to be living in poverty, but particularly for people who are disabled or have a chronic health condition, there are additional expenses that come with that. And that makes it even harder to survive a few hundred dollars a week below the poverty line when you then have medication, appointments, food and energy costs that may not apply to someone who isn't disabled.
Yeah, it's quite cynical too. If we go back around, I'm really interested in how this. I just want people to underline the fact that the stage three tax cuts are forecast to cost $377 billion over 10 years, and the cost of negative gearing and capital gains tax concessions from 2010 to 2032 is estimated to be $228 billion. So we're not talking about peanuts when it comes to big end of town welfare, are we?
No, and, you know, Fiona Katauskas, some people might be familiar with her, she's a cartoonist, made a really great point today. And her point, it's a very simple one that's really obvious when you think about it, that tax cuts aren't free. Every single tax cut is money being ripped out of the public purse. It's money being taken away from vital services, from things that benefit the entire community, going to individuals so that they can, I suppose, buy more investment properties and extract more rent from those of us who will never be able to buy a home, and obviously go on their holidays, or many of them are buying their yachts and their private jets, while, you know, my fridge is bare and I'm sitting here alongside millions of other people on Centrelink payments in the same situation. It would cost a lot less money for the government to directly support people on the lowest income and to make very high income people pay their fair share. And certainly our current highest tax bracket is not what I would call fair. Yesterday I looked up what the top tax rate was when I was born in 1986, and the highest income earners were paying 60 cents at that time, 60 cents in the dollar, over a certain amount. And the second highest tax bracket was 46 cents in the dollar. So that's kind of, you know, the system that we used to have was that it was a really redistributive system, a progressive taxation system. And I think people don't realize quite how drastically we have moved away from that. And we really now are in a very regressive system that is almost a flat tax system, with everyone at every income bracket paying lower tax rates. And this is just viewed as an innate, unquestionable good without anyone ever wanting to weigh up what the cost of that is.
Yeah, well, the report card that you would give to the present Labor government is not a very flattering one.
It isn't. There is only one policy, actually, that I could give them more than zero on. And the one thing that they have done is enable more single parents to access the parenting payment and not have mutual obligations. It's a small number of people, and there are still well over 100,000 primary carer single parents on the on payments that are lower than the parenting payment and have mutual obligations requirements. It's a tiny step in the right direction. And for the rest of us, whatever you hear, whatever spin you hear about things like the job seeker increase last year, which was less than our actual costs were going up, the rent assistance increase, I think I got the highest increase that you can get, and I think it was $10 a week. The year before that kicked in, my rent had gone up by $100 a week. So they're absolutely, it's just obscene actually how much they're willing to try and spin things that they have to know are not meaningful. And it's, you know, I referred to it yesterday as gaslighting, trying to tell poor people that they've helped us when everyone I talk to is saying whatever things they have done, our lives as we are actually experiencing them are worse than they were 2 years ago. And whether that is this government's fault or macroeconomic factors that were in play before it came to power is irrelevant. This is what's actually happening. And when Scott Morrison resigned yesterday, I was thinking about a lot of the really bad things he did, but all I could actually focus on was the fact that he lifted people above the poverty line and took away mutual obligations and the absolute flourishing of the people that I was talking to who experienced those short-term changes
during
and what
COVID.
Our society would look like. Yes, yes, in 2020.
Yeah.
You know,
it is possible.
Really horrific. It's both possible and devastating that they both took it away at the time and that Labor have been too cowardly to say it is possible, we just did it, and we want to make sure that every person who needs support is getting real support as we have just done.